This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We all know bullying. Perhaps you remember being the victim of bullying when you were young. Perhaps you yourself were the bully at one point in your life. Now technology has given rise to a relatively new form of bullying, which inflicts emotional harm in a stealth manner, working through websites, chat rooms, email, cell phones, and instant messaging. Cyberbullying. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by the lead author of a new national study by Iowa State University researchers on cyberbullying. But first, Tina Meyer joins us. You may recall her family's tragic story that made national news in 2006. Tina Meyer is the mother of Megan Meyer, a 13-year-old middle schooler from St. Charles, Missouri. Megan Meyer committed suicide after a fictitious person befriended her, but then posted untrue online bulletins about the teen. A neighbor was put on trial for the incident, and the case drew nationwide exposure in 2006 to the issue of cyberbullying. Tina Meyer has since formed the Megan Meyer Foundation. This is to raise awareness and educate parents and community members about cyberbullying, and is now a national spokesperson about the dangers of these internet crimes. Meyer will headline the day-long cybercrime awareness conference at the Des Moines Area Community College Ankeny campus this Saturday, March 27th. The program is free and open to the public. Tina Meyer now joins us by phone from her home in Missouri. Good afternoon to you, Tina Meyer.
Good afternoon to you also. Thank you.
Remind us of the events that led to your daughter's death in 2006.
Well, my daughter, Megan, was a middle school student. Megan was diagnosed with depression and attention deficit disorder in the third grade. So those are things that for several years we had diagnosed, we took her to doctors, and we had pretty much under control. In middle school, it's a pretty tough age for a lot of kids. And Megan was, in seventh grade, bullied consistently at school by boys, mostly. She was called a fat cow and an elephant as she stood in line for lunch line. Girls found her in the gym locker room crying when kids would call her thunder thighs during gym when she'd run around and take activities in gym. It got to the point where it was so bad where we as her parents decided that we could not watch her going to school every day crying, coming home from school crying, and we switched her to a private school. Not because we thought it had all the answers, it was going to be perfect, but a switch and a change for her.
Mm-hmm.
Megan started a MySpace page, and I had very strict rules on it. I allowed her to have it, but the rule was she did not have her password. Her dad and I had her password. We had to keep the MySpace page kept private. We had to be in the room at all times when she was on the computer, so it had to be in an open space, never allowed in the bedroom. I even had a program on the computer which monitored every instant message and every website that she went to. And I had to prove the content that went on the page. So I thought pretty much as a parent, I had this pretty much locked down that I was going to be able to monitor everything. Megan started in MySpace and a few weeks in befriended a boy named Josh Evans. She did not know who he was. And I've had many people who have said to me during this time, you know, why did you allow her to add someone that she didn't know? You know, that was a wrong thing to do. And while I agree and tell kids, do not add people that you don't know. You know, if it's not your friend, not your family member, don't add them.
Mm-hmm.
My thing was I let her add him because of all of the controls that I had onto the computer. And I go out and will ask thousands and thousands and thousands of kids the same question. If you're sitting there just like Megan was and you saw a cute boy or a cute girl and you wanted to add them but your parents said no, they walk away or walk out of the room 5 minutes later, what are you guys going to do?
Going to add them, right?
They're going to add them.
Right. So tell us how this relationship with this person who called himself Josh Evans, how that became nasty and eventually resulted in your daughter's death.
Sure. They talked for 5 weeks, like each other. On October 15th, it was a Sunday night, Megan received a message from him out of the blue that said she wasn't a nice person. He didn't want to be friends with her anymore. Monday, she went to school, was in a great mood, handed out a birthday invitation. And she received a message when she got home from school that afternoon from Josh Evans saying he didn't like her, no one liked her. And this went back and forth for a few minutes. I left the house and told Megan to sign off. Unfortunately, she didn't. I checked on her a couple of times when I was gone, and she was crying. I told her to please get off of the MySpace account. When I got home, I had seen these horrible messages going back and forth from Josh Evans to Megan, and now two other girls Josh Evans had gotten involved. Megan was cyberbullied for 2 hours. That was it, 2 hours. I talked to her about, they called her nasty, horrible names. It wasn't just they didn't like her. It was horrible names, horrible comments that were going out to hundreds, if not thousands, of kids that she previously went to school with and currently did. And Megan was overwhelmed, and I told her as a parent she should have listened, that I could have helped her handle this better if she would have signed off when she was told to. And she ran upstairs to her room. I started talking to her father about what was going on, why Megan was upset, and what had transpired, and it was about 20 minutes went by, and all of a sudden my heart just stopped. I took off running upstairs to her room. I had a horrible feeling, and I opened the door, and I found her hanging. In her closet. Megan was transported to Children's Hospital, but unfortunately died on October 17th, 2006. We found out about 5 weeks later that from a neighbor down the street we didn't know very well that actually there was never a boy, Josh Evans. It was actually the mother who lived four houses down the street, who was 46 at the time, her 13-year-old daughter and an 18-year-old girl who worked out of her home part-time.
And this eventually resulted in a court case against this mother who was posing as this online figure, Josh Evans. What is your understanding of what could make her think this was something that she needed to do to bully your daughter?
You know, I don't know because I'm not that devious to be able to think of why an adult would do that. We know children, you know, don't have, you know, they are not mature enough to sometimes understand things. We as adults do. I don't know why mentally she did that, but I do know that her daughter and my daughter had been friends since the fourth grade, and their friendship had fallen apart between seventh and eighth grade summer. They had heard that Megan had called her daughter a bad name, and they decided to create this account to find out if Megan was talking about her daughter behind her back. Unfortunately, when she didn't find anything, they kept it going. And unfortunately, my daughter took her own life as a result of this.
So sorry for your loss. Now, the court case, what was Lori Drew, the mother, indicted on, and what was the outcome of that case?
She was indicted in Los Angeles on four federal charges. They were accessing the computer without authorization. And that is what she was actually found guilty on. The jury did find her guilty on three counts of the accessing the computer without authorization. Unfortunately, the judge later in 2009 dismissed the case and threw it out, stating that it would be unconstitutional to convict Lori Drew of this because many people get on social networking sites and click the terms of service button, stating that they agree with the terms on that site. But they maybe don't put their correct age, their correct address, occupation, those things. And he said that he would have to convict all of the people who didn't tell the truth if he convicted Lori Drew. I feel that's a horrible statement to put out there. They are two completely, totally different things. And it does not give somebody the right to go out and to harass and threaten and stalk another person. And unfortunately, he sent the wrong message on that.
Tina Meyer, you have since formed the Megan Meyer Foundation. What is its mission?
The Megan Meyer Foundation's mission is to bring awareness, education, and promote positive change to children, parents, and educators regarding bullying and cyberbullying. I think that, well, I know there's nothing I can do that what happened to Megan, but if I can go out and talk about Megan's story, get people to connect and understand, and then talk to them about ways, children, about ways to protect themselves while online, and talk to parents about and educators what they can do to help and monitor and see these things, then you know what? If there's one child, one family that does not have to endure what we have, then it's been a major accomplishment, and I would be thrilled.
I would like to get into the details of prevention a little bit later, but first now I'd like to introduce another guest to our conversation, the lead author of a new national study on cyberbullying, Iowa State University Assistant Professor of Curriculum and Instruction, Warren Blumenfeld, is joining us from Iowa Public Radio Studios in Ames. Good afternoon to you, Professor Blumenfeld.
Good afternoon.
Your study, co-authored by Robin Cooper, a research and evaluation scientist at ISU's Research Institute for Studies in Education, is published in this month's special LGBT-themed issue of the International Journal of Critical Pedagogy. And your study focused on youth who were lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and their allies. Why did you look at this specific group?
Well, there are a number of studies that are looking at the range and of cyberbullying across the United States. And we wanted to specifically target in on certain social identities that we have seen a higher rate of cyberbullying. So we looked specifically at gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender youth. We also asked for issues around race, disability, religion, biological sex, and gender expression as well. And we saw variations in the rates of cyberbullying on young people between the ages of 11 and 22, specifically around targeting certain social identities.
Mm-hmm. What were the most striking findings for you?
Well, we found that within the last 30 days before the young people took the survey, 54% had been cyberbullied on account of their sexual identity. 37% had been cyberbullied on account of their gender identity or expression. 26% had been cyberbullied on account of their religious orientation. So we saw, especially amongst the LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender young people, that they experienced significantly higher rates of being cyberbullied than their heterosexual counterparts.
I also see in the numbers in your study that more than a quarter, 26%, had suicidal thoughts.
Yes, that's another thing. We found higher rates of depression, higher rates of suicidal ideation, and also attempts, higher rates of feeling embarrassed, also higher rates of skipping school because of fear of being either face-to-face bullied or, in this case, cyberbullied. So we see the emotional tolls that cyberbullying takes on young people.
You've been listening to, you were on the with us listening to Tina tell the story, a tragic story of her daughter and all the great lengths they went to monitor this and prevent this. What is your reaction when you hear that story? A lot of commonalities with what you're dealing with, I imagine.
Exactly. And I really feel honored to be on the show with Tina today. You're one of my heroes, going out there and spreading the word of the dangers of cyberbullying across the United States. When I was a young person, I grew up, I didn't express my gender the way that I was supposed to express my gender. And I was constantly bullied in the 1950s and the 1960s. I later grew up to be gay. And many of the reasons why people picked on me at that time was because, again, I didn't express my gender. And I have since been diagnosed with social anxiety disorder, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So these are conditions that last a lifetime. I'm 62 years old right now, and I still suffer from the effects of being bullied in school. And it really bothers me when I hear people still today talk about, oh, bullying has always existed. It will always exist. It's something that young people need to get used to. They need to toughen up. It gets them prepared for the real world. I don't think that is the case. It takes extreme tolls on people. We really need to be dealing with this as a social problem.
Okay, we have to take a short break, and then we'll be back with Professor Warren Blumenfeld of Iowa State University, the lead author of a new national study on cyberbullying, and also Tina Meyer, a mother of a cyberbullying victim that ended her teenage daughter's in her teenage daughter's suicide. Meyer will headline a day-long cybercrime awareness conference this Saturday at the Des Moines Area Community College Ankeny campus. We'd like to hear from you when we come back. Have you been the victim of a cyberbullying? Have you been a bully? Tell us about your experience. What do you think should be done about the rise of bullying online? We'll talk about prevention when we come back. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour talking about cyberbullying. Tina Meyer is joining us by phone from her home in Missouri. She's the mother of a cyberbullying victim that ended in her teenage daughter's suicide. Meyer will headline a day-long cybercrime awareness conference at the Des Moines Area Community College Ankeny campus this Saturday. And also joining us, Professor Warren Blumenfeld, the lead author of a new national study on cyberbullying at ISU. And he is joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Ames. We'd like to have your views on this. What do you think should be done about the rise of bullying online? What's driving it? What is your experience with it? 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Before we get to those calls and emails, I'd like to turn to our guest to get some reaction, also steer towards prevention in the remaining minutes of our hour. According to a recent survey commissioned by the U.S. Department of Justice, cyberbullying and exposure to cyber predators are at an all-time high. This study also found a marked drop in physical bullying, what we might call old-fashioned bullying among American children, even as cyberbullying increased nationwide, and the researchers attributed the reduction in part to anti-bullying laws similar to the one passed here in Iowa in 2007. So let me turn to you, Professor Blumenfeld. Is new legislation needed in Iowa and other states that specifically targets cyberbullying? We do have bullying, anti-bullying laws here since 2007.
I think in terms of what can be done, there's a whole menu that really needs to be addressed. One of them is legislation. I think there's about 17 states across the country right now that do have anti-bullying legislation that includes electronic forms of bullying, like the landmark law that was passed here in 2007. And now I know that the Department of Education is making sure or requiring that each school and school district within the state have express policies dealing with bullying and with cyberbullying and some of the consequences that accrue to cyberbullying and face-to-face bullying. But I think one of the greatest techniques or strategies to reduce bullying in our schools and in our society is to empower the peers themselves. We cannot look at bullying as what's called the dyadic view. It's perpetrated by those who bully and those who are being bullied. Basically, everyone has a role to play or does play a role in the bullying drama. There are those who actually do the bullying. There are those who follow and encourage those who do the bullying. There are those who condone the bullying and in a way kind of passively perpetuate the bullying. There are those who are the onlookers, sometimes called the bystanders, who know what's going on but actually don't get involved in any way whatsoever. There are those who really want to intervene but for some reason don't feel empowered or safe enough to come to the aid of those who are being bullied. Then there are those who are actually the interveners, the upstanders we call them, from bystander to upstander, who take an active role in preventing and stopping bullying incidents. And then there are those who are actually being bullied. So everyone really does play a role. If we can find more effective ways for our schools, our society, to empower the bystander to become the upstander.
Tina Meyer, what do you have to add to what Professor Blumenfeld just mentioned about preventing cyberbullying?
Well, I agree on many different levels of what he's saying. Legislation certainly is something that we need to have. We have to have that for people who unfortunately don't listen to the laws or don't care and continue to do things. It's not going to stop this. but it will help hopefully prevent people from this in the future seeing that there is a precedent, something's going to be there, and they don't want to go to jail.
But before you go on, is that one of the reasons you're visiting Iowa, to have Iowa introduce new legislation to ratchet it up into the electronic sphere to protect, have anti-cyberbullying legislation go through into law?
No, that's not my main reason for being there. Mine is to speak to the community, talking to them about ways that they can protect their children, what they can do. So that's really where I'm at for that on bullying and cyberbullying. But certainly, I absolutely feel it's essential that we have the laws in place. But the other part of it is we have to have the education and the awareness. And exactly what he's talking about getting the bystanders, they're the ones that see this. They know it before teachers do. They know it before parents do. And if we don't empower them, I have a daughter who has many classmates that are 13 and almost 14. They don't. Their reasoning for not standing up for others is because they're scared. They don't feel they're strong enough to do it. And we have to let them know through our education system that we want kids to stand up for others, that we're not going to call them tattletales, go sit down, stop being a snitch, that we empower them to do that. So I think it's very important to have that in the school system. It must be very strong and put out there so that kids know they have that ability.
Okay, let's try to squeeze in a few calls from our listeners before we have to go. Rachel is joining us from Waverly. I believe you wanted to mention something directly on this point, Rachel. Good afternoon.
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to say that sometimes there's a disconnect between what happens during school hours and what happens outside of school hours. And how can we sort of narrow that gray area? I mean, can teachers intervene when cyberbullying goes on, say, in the evenings from a computer rather than a text message during school hours?
Professor Blumenfeld, do you have anything to respond to that? What about outside the school? Because this cyberbullying presumably takes place the majority of time outside of school.
Around the country right now, there's a real patchwork quilt of different legislation. We really need to have a national legislation that really addresses this on a unified level. Because many times the technology far outpaces the laws, many times the laws have not caught up yet with the technology. There is a clause, I believe, in the Iowa law that if in some way the off-campus bullying interferes with the educational climate in the schools, then the principal, the other officials within the school, has jurisdiction. But if they can't prove that it interferes with the educational climate, I'm not really sure what consequences the officials in the school can really dole out. So we really need to have very clear legislation which dictates exactly the responsibilities and the rights of the educational leaders and the community leaders to fight against this form of bullying.
Okay, let's thank you, Rachel, calling from Waverly, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100 to join our conversation. And let's go to Jim in Spencer. Good afternoon, Jim. Thanks for joining our program.
Yeah, hi. I'm aware of a lot of different types of bullying, and some take place, you know, right in the classroom. And one of my observations is that some of the best bullies are being nurtured in the school. One of the problems that I see is that there are actually a lot of teachers who are very good at bullying, and when other students observe, you know, how one student may react or the kinds of experiences that are taking place in the classroom, that it's a way of actually indoctrinating fresh bullies and teaching, you know, people that there's a certain kind of pleasure that comes from demeaning someone. And I think that the problem we're having is that a lot of the most successful people in school are returning as teachers. And one of the reasons they enjoyed it so much is because of this very topic.
Hmm. So this all fits in with, I'm not sure if Professor Blumenfeld agrees with this, but this is sort of the draining the swamp idea that you have to get rid of the power that the bully has by taking away that network of support.
To be quite frank, I can't really blame the young people. They didn't invent these bullying. They're seeing it from their adult role models. We see it in Makers Myers' case. It was an adult, a 46-year-old woman who was perpetrating the bullying. When we see on Capitol Hill the Congressional Black Caucus being spit upon and the N-word being lodged against them because they're in favor of the health care bill, we see these role models. These are adults who are perpetuating this kind of bigotry and bullying, and young people follow their lead in many ways. So we really need to address bullying within the adult community as well.
Mm. Tina Meyer, I want to ask you, in the short time that we've had to cope with cyberbullying as a society and the short time that your foundation has been in existence, have you noticed any progress in terms of raising awareness, putting this on the radar so people can act and prevent cyberbullying?
You know, I think that the one positive thing is that we are hearing so much about it now because it is out there. It is in the media. So when situations happen, it's right there in front of our faces. I will get calls and emails weekly from schools across the United States that are working hard in their schools to make sure that they are doing bullying prevention, anti-cyberbullying prevention, having me come out and speak or other people come out and speak about this topic to try to get their school on board. That, to me, is definitely progress. There is so much more work that needs to be done. We have to continue. You know, teenagers think of today, and then they don't think about tomorrow, so we have to continually keep getting it out there to them. And I think that parents maybe need to go to their schools, find out what their school policies are on bullying and cyberbullying, see if they have any. And if they don't have any clear policies in place, to go to the school board, to talk to the superintendent and push to make sure that these are in place until we wait for the laws to get there, because that will take some time.
What do we do? You were in this situation. It's a tough question to ask you. I'm sure you've wrestled with it. How might Megan's death have been prevented? It seems that you were on task. You were monitoring Megan's online work, and this all happened at home, not at school, though undoubtedly it had ties to school. Looking back, how can future such cases be prevented by parents at home?
You know, I have, believe me, laid up endless nights thinking about what could I have done. And, you know, I don't really truly know anything more that I could have done. I put all of the protections in place. Yes, I did allow Megan to add somebody that she didn't know, but it was out of fear that she would add him behind my back and there would be something bad. I truly think that we as adults have to start talking to our children. We have to start setting clear boundaries with them, letting them know, you know what, I don't really care what you're going to be doing on Friday night, but I am going to have your password. I pay for the cell phone bills. I pay for the internet bills. I will know what your password is. If not, it will be shut down. And I think that parents have to talk to children, not scream and yell and tell them, you know, they're going to take all these things away if something goes wrong, but open up, know what's going on in their kids, make sure they know if they're on Facebook, MySpace, know what's going on with their friends, and just have that open communication always.
Professor Blumenfeld, I want to ask how cyberbullying is different than physical bullying that we know goes back to the childhood of everyone listening here. What differentiates the two?
In psychology, in cyber psychology, we call it the disinhibition effect. Professor Suler really invented that term, which means that what you might not do face-to-face because you can see the results, the consequences of your actions, the body language, the expression of the person that you're targeting, you don't have that immediate feedback in cyberspace. So in some ways, you're disinhibited from even being more aggressive, more hurtful in many ways. Also, the anonymity of cyberspace often helps people avoid the consequences of their actions. So in some ways, the cyberspace can even be a worse and a higher form of aggression and of hatred than even face-to-face bullying.
Mm-hmm. Especially this, at the center of this is the anonymity that you have. You go to any media website that allows reactions in the form of blog entries, mm-hmm. and people signing in as Joe43 or something like that. Because they are anonymous, you come up with some things that are just, you're amazed that these are the people walking around in the streets with you.
And that's something about cyberspace. You can continually reinvent yourself. You can be anything and anyone with any social identity that you want.
I was also interested to see in your study that the victims of cyberbullying in your study, there were over 400 of them that you looked at, felt helpless to do anything about it. Tell us about that. Why?
Well, many of them, first of all, didn't feel that adults could do anything about it. Many of them felt that they could not report it for a number of reasons. If they reported it, they felt that they would be even more increased in terms of being the victims of bullying. And especially with the LGBT students, in many ways, if they would tell their parents that they're being cyberbullied in homophobic ways, they might have to divulge information that they might not be ready to divulge with their parents, that they're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. Also, especially for many rural young people, where the Internet is their only real option and window of the world, they're many times hesitant to say that they're being bullied in a cyberspace for fear that their parents or other trusted adults will take away the technologies which opens those windows, thereby closing those windows if those technologies were taken away from them. Mm-hmm. So the majority of our LGBT young people felt that they could not tell a trusted adult for a number of reasons. One of the major ones being that they didn't think anything could be done about it.
Mm-hmm. And Tina Meyer mentioned that her advice to parents is to, you know those passwords, shut it down if they don't agree to this. But something tells me also based on your study that would be hard to implement. You're shutting down almost an entire social life because they are lived so much in the cyber world these days by youth.
Exactly. And we found that the highest percentage of those who were bullied were on the social networking sites, the MySpace, the Facebook, the Twitter. And those are the ones that are really popular, and they serve a lot of benefits. And I also want to talk about the benefits of the technology. There are many good things that are happening, and young people are getting to know one another, but also there's the downsides, the counterpoint of those technologies that really need to be worked out. One of the major things that the students said, if they could do anything, they want to see more monitoring software, but also more live monitors on the social networking systems that would delete a lot of these negative messages by a live person there to monitor what's going on. I don't know how appropriate this is, but this was one of the major recommendations that participants in our study made.
Okay, Professor Warren Blumenfeld, thank you very much for joining us. Professor Blumenfeld, the lead author in a new national study on cyberbullying, ISU Assistant Professor of Curriculum and Instruction. Thank you very much. Also, thanks to Tina Meyer, the mother of a cyberbullying victim that ended in her teenage daughter's suicide. Meyer will headline a day-long cybercrime awareness conference at the Des Moines Area Community College Ankeny campus this Saturday. And I want to thank you both for joining our conversation. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News.